Hello and welcome to the Business of Authority. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Rochelle Moulton.
And today we're going to talk about the 80-20 rule and how to focus on the 20% that gives you the 80% of your results.
Yes.
Rochelle's got this hilarious real estate story that kind of inspired this, so let's kick it off there.
Oh God, no pressure. Hilarious?
Well, I think it's pretty funny.
So I was listening to this podcast, and an investor came on and told the story that when he was just getting started in the business and he was doing what they call driving for dollars, which is you drive around and look for properties that might be vacant or need a lot of work. So he drives by this property that's literally burnt to a crisp. Like some of the smoke is still coming out. There'd been a big fire, and the owner happened to be there. So he stopped and he said, you know, I'd like to buy your property. And the guy said, listen, I just got my insurance check. You can have it for $500. So basically he was buying the land, right, for $500. Yeah. And he's like, okay, you got a deal. So he literally wrote him a check and then made a phone call because he had a group of potential buyers lined up and said, hey, I have this property. He sold it for $17,500 in 45 minutes.
Yeah, so that's like $17,000 an hour. Better than $17,000 an hour. Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't billing by the hour.
No.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel bad for the guy whose house burned down, but I love stories like that. I am a huge fan of the 80-20 rule and focusing your efforts where they're going to give you the most bang for the buck. It's all about leverage. And, my mission is to rid the world of hourly billing. And the reason is because it's bad for everyone because it doesn't give you any leverage. So thinking about our own businesses.
Yeah. Jonathan, let me just add one thing to that, which I'd forgotten, which is I told you he sold the land for $17,500. He sold it to someone who developed the property and sold it for $185,000. So everybody has their own form of leverage to apply. I thought that was such an interesting story in that way.
Right. And it's a win-win all the way up the chain. It's like a equitable value exchange. I love that. So that, you know, we're not going to talk about flipping houses this episode, but maybe in the future. But what that got us thinking about was the places in our businesses and in your business where you could apply this 80-20 rule because it can be, like, I know what mine are, and I know, you know, Rochelle, you know what yours are, but both of us have had the experience of kind of like, not forgetting, but getting sloppy and kind of like getting distracted in a shiny object and this thing, that thing, the other. And it's just like, wait a second, like, let's get back to basics here. Mm-hmm. So can you think of some places in your business where 20% of the effort goes in, you know, comes to 80% of the result or results in 80% of the result? Is that what I said?
Yeah. 20% effort, 80% result. Actually, I have like a 90-10, which is whenever I talk to a potential client in my sweet spot who has reached out to me, right? Because they're reaching out to me because they've already defined a problem. And by whatever reason or however they got to me, and we have a conversation. So we might spend 45 minutes to an hour in a call. I write a confirming note and invoice them and they pay. Like literally it's kind of like the 45 minute guy. It happens almost that fast. It happens within an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And then I serve the client and make the results happen. So when I think about my business, I think, how can I get more of those ideal people on the phone? Because I've got a really, really high close rate when they're on the phone.
Right. Yep. Same here. I could also add to that by saying that, you know, I've got non-trivial income that comes from things like books and courses and those sorts of things, but I haven't looked at the numbers, but I'm sure, I'm positive that 80% of my income comes from 10% or probably 20 or maybe even 10% of my customers, like where there's these super duper customers, like the VIP customers that are dramatically outweigh, you know, that basically, it's, you know, just like it says, 80% of the income. I can think of activities that I undertake that result in much more bang for the buck than other things. So, you know, certainly for me, that's writing. Like, writing is, like, if I stopped doing everything else, Just keep writing. Like if I stopped coaching and doing like having meetings of any kind and just kept writing, that one thing would be 80% of the results. You know, just selling books and courses and stuff that doesn't require me to show up to deliver it.
You know, when you were saying that, I was thinking of, I think it's Kevin Kelly's definition of true fans, right? Where they'll buy everything that you produce. That's sort of what you were describing.
Yeah.
When you have a business model where you're producing content that people pay for, then you can create these raving super fans who want everything you create.
Yep.
And his point was you don't have to have a, I mean, the point he originally made in his article is if you have 1,000, you can make a living as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on your business model. A lot of people listening to this can do really well with a lot fewer than 1,000 true fans.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not selling songs for 99 cents.
Right. So, okay. So how, I mean, do we just need to advise ourselves and like people can learn by osmosis? Like how can we remind ourselves to focus on the low hanging fruit, the 20% and not get distracted by the 80% or, you know, the 80% of other stuff that doesn't deliver as much?
Well, I don't know. I kind of have this, maybe this is just how my brain works. I think the way that I would do this is I would start with the 20%. I would literally take a sheet of paper or a clean document page on your screen and write out what are the things that you do, the 20%, what are those? Just get super clear, hyper-focused, and make a list, right? What are those things? I think that's the starting point. And I feel like now, and when we're recording this, we're kind of in the midst of what I've been calling the COVID slump. I feel like it's kind of a good back to basics reminder of what really drives our businesses. And I think it's a good discipline, a good practice to just step back and start fresh with that 20% list.
Yeah. So we've talked about this a couple times over the course of, you know, the last six or, you know, maybe, oh, geez, probably longer than that now. but like this notion of taking stock of what's working and what's not working. And a couple of shows ago, we talked about metrics and, you know, not to be, go nuts over metrics, but, you know, you do, if you don't know which things are delivering the 80% results, then you probably have a step to do before you can make your list of what's really working. But for me, you know, I know for me recently, I was, you know, it was clear to me that writing is like the thing, like speaking is really good too. I'm not really doing that right now, of course, other than podcasting, but yeah, writing's a big thing. And so I was like, all right, how can I make this even easier? How can I make it so that even the small amount of friction that I do have on my daily list is even smaller? Like, how can I decrease the friction of the kind of the production aspect of sending out a daily email? So for the past week or two, I've been, you know, coding up some basic, really, really simple pages on my website that kind of streamline the process of, like, it shortens the time from me being done with an article and it being published to my website and my mailing list and Twitter and LinkedIn, which before was a multi-step process. It involved me logging into a variety of different applications. It was just, it's a tiny, and believe me, it's weird because it's a very tiny amount of work that I had to do in each one, but I had to do it and it really added up, and yeah, I had to use brain power. I didn't really, it wasn't even so much stuff that I needed an SOP. It was only like four steps, but every step was like, you know, go to the web browser, load the page, maybe log in, wait for it to load. Oh, why is this site so slow? And then go in and paste it. Did I save? Oh, is that double check. And like, okay, hit send. And now it's like, it's so easy for me to publish, you know, this thing that's so important, like me writing every day. It's like write my post in any text editor anywhere, paste it into a web page and click a button. It's super fast and immediately goes. It feels like
that's
I'm tweeting.
Your newest product, right? You're going to be selling this on your website, right? Because I want one.
I mean, that's the funny thing is, like, if I did try to turn it into a product, it would turn into those other things. It would be like
exactly
right. Like the reason it's so, I mean, it's easier than tweeting. it's just like paste, click, done. And it goes out all over the place. And it's so great. It's like such a great feeling. So, you know, the moral of the story is, you know, for 3 years plus, I've had this sort of more or less the same routine for my daily broadcast. So it's not like I built this thing day one. It was like, I know what I need. I need this, you know, fancy thing. But I, you know, essentially I see the last 3 years as prototyping and solidifying the process of like where I want stuff to go, how I want it to feel, what I want it to look like on different platforms. And with that done, stepping back and saying, I could probably take some friction out of this process. And in fact, I took so much friction out of the process that I posted two emails on Sunday. I was like, oh, this is so much fun. It feels like I'm just writing. There's no publishing. Yes. Like I don't have to do the publishing part. It just is published. So, you know, for me, that's like taking our own advice from this episode, which is like, what is the thing that pays the most dividends? Writing. Okay, let me look at my writing process. Can I fix any of this? And it's like, I sure can.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's because it's like a window between you and the audience. And the problem is you can see it over there, but you still have to get through it. Mm-hmm. And that's the friction. So I love that solution. I'm so jealous right now. But yeah, I mean, I think this will happen to a lot of people in our audience where writing is such a critical part, because when we're talking about building authority, it's pretty hard to do it without writing, without generating ideas and thoughts around that. I was thinking, speaking, I'm doing something later today in front of a small group, and I love doing those kinds of things. And I usually find that I'll have a lead or a project out of that, even if the group is small. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I find is social media, again, for me, and I'm not talking about the kind where you drop into oblivion on Facebook and then you come back up, you know, an hour later wondering what happened.
Where am I?
Yeah. For me, I think of social media as two things. It's a distribution system for your content. Mm-hmm. It's a way to get a broader distribution than you already have and entice people to sign up for your list. But it's also a way to engage. And you can engage other people in ideas. You can engage them in, you know, a cute picture of your dog, because that helps. That works too. Not a steady diet, but some here and there. So I find that as long as I'm really careful about managing the interface, that social media is part of my 20%. It's where I get new people, new projects, new work, new clients and buyers.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I do a little bit of social media. It's mostly just broadcast from my list, but I do engage a little bit. But really, for me, it's never been great. I know for you it has been, but for me, it's never been real productive. But for me, webinars is the thing that has been super, super productive for me. And to take our own advice, I've kind of fallen off the bandwagon. I was doing them once a month for like a six month period, and it was great. It's fun, it's easy, people love them, and then they end up on my mailing list. Like, for by far that was a great thing to do, and I just sort of fell off the wagon. And so now's a good time for me to be like, you know, maybe I should start doing that again. I like it, it's easy, and it works. So I've got the content, you know, and it's just like people out there need to hear it. And for whatever reason, What are the reasons? I don't know. Why do people respond to webinars that I put? Like, why do people sign up for them? I don't know. Maybe it's the type of people, or it's the type of message. I have no idea why, but I do know that, you know, I can say, hey, I'm going to do a webinar tomorrow, and 500 people show up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, I'll publish it on social media and be like, hey, social media, I'm going to do a webinar tomorrow about how to tell people what you do, or how to write a project proposal, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, Hello, everyone.
Well, so, sounds like you need to do one.
Yes.
Yeah, well, when you did the 6 months, was it a series, or was it just like whatever people were asking you about that month?
It wasn't a series, but they all fit together. So I decided in advance what they were going to be. And so it was kind of like each one was a different planet in my content solar system. And And they all kind of fit together. So if you could, you know, if you came to all of them, you wouldn't be like, oh, this is just rehash of the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do try to, I have more fun doing them when they're different every time. It's, mm-hmm. it means creating, yeah. you know, more content, but I don't really have a problem with that. So maybe that's why they're engaging. It's not like me delivering the same thing about value pricing over again. Like it'll be something more exciting.
Well, you know, this goes back to doing something that fits with your brand and the things that you want to teach your audience. I mean, there's a, I think, is it Amy Porterfield who does this? Somebody on the internet who has a big audience does this thing where it's the same webinar every Friday. So you can sign up for it and it's not live, right?
Yeah, it's like an evergreen funnel.
Yeah, yeah. Feels like it's live because right. you see the questions, but you can't ask a question. But what's interesting about that, as long as you know, it's transparent. I mean, I don't think people should fake a live webinar when it's taped, but as long as it's transparent, what's great about that is that if you've got something that's really evergreen that ties right to your core strength, your big idea, that is a way to especially when you're really busy, if you're in the early stages where you don't have as much time because you're still busy serving, you know, clients, flesh and blood clients, you can do that kind of thing, which allows you to leverage your content and do it in some different ways.
That reminds me of an experience I had once that might be useful to the listener. It's related, where I don't remember who did it, but it was a group of people and we put together a webinar and pre-recorded it. So it looked really good. It was like edited and everything. And transparently we said, okay, on Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to play this sort of panel that's about this subject. And we're going to be in the chat answering questions. So we could be presenting and answering at the same time, which I really liked. Oh,
yeah. I like that a lot.
So it still was live, but then you just didn't have to perform. Mm-hmm. So you could really, you know, if I went back, certain talks I've given them a number of times. There's probably a time that I did it the best, you know, and other times maybe not as good. So I could grab that video and be like, hey, I'm going to present this video again. I'm going to be in the audience. You know, it's kind of like screening it, you know, with the director there. And I'm going to run the video. I'm going to be in here live to answer questions. And, you know, I'm going to play the video so I don't have to pay attention to presenting. I can actually pay attention to you. Mm-hmm. And that'd be an interesting thing to do. I like that
a lot.
Yeah. Actually. From a software standpoint, I'm not sure how I would do it, but I'm sure there's a way. I'm sure some dear listener is going to tweet at me.
Yeah, somebody knows the way to do that.
Right. So for me, definitely doing webinars is in the 20% that delivers 80% of results for sure. So if I just wrote and did webinars, podcasting is another one for me for sure. That's right now, that's the extent of my speaking engagements. But I recorded one right before we recorded this one. And I love doing it. It's really easy. It goes out to someone else's audience, of course, and they obviously listen to podcasts. So that kind of brings them into our ecosystem. And if there's a theme for me, I'm noticing that there's a bunch of stuff that I think is fun and easy that delivers big results. So then I guess the flip side would be what are the things that we're doing that are not fun or not easy and don't deliver 80% of the results that we could perhaps just stop doing?
Stop entirely? Or you mean maybe hand them off if there's something that sort of seems like it has to be done, but we don't want to do it?
Yeah, maybe that. I'd probably just stop doing it. That's my personality.
Well, you know, for me, it's administrative stuff. Like, I just hate doing anything that's like the same thing every week or every month. I don't enjoy that. So like, I don't want to do the accounting. I don't want to say, oh, this expense goes in this column.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to do any of that. It's necessary, but so I have somebody else do that.
Sure.
You know, I still have clients that I bill. I really don't like dealing with the billing system. It's not complicated. It's just FreshBooks, but I really don't like to do it. So my VA does that.
Yeah, it feels like a robot work.
Yeah, and I'm kind of at the same place about that you were about your content. Because when I do my daily piece, I wind up, I experiment with ConvertKit and send it to myself because there's something about seeing it in my inbox as an email that strikes me differently than just when I write it.
Definitely.
So I do that, and I don't want to outsource that because somebody else can't look at it and edit it the same way that I would. Mm-hmm. But then it's kind of what you say. It's like plug and chug. Got to put it in here, put it in here. Yeah. And, you know, and my weekly post goes in two different places because I have two different lists for that. I have a weekly list and a daily list, but they get the same email. But the same content is posted in two different places. So mm-hmm. there's like that kind of stuff mm-hmm. that I still do myself, and I hate doing it because it's repetitive and boring. I love the writing part,
yeah,
but not the getting it posted and getting it out there.
Yeah,
that's the challenge. So for me, it's baked into my personality that anything repetitive is not going to get my closest attention. So I will forget, oh, it's Thursday. Oh, I didn't do that. Now, luckily, the writing it's attached to something I like to do. So yeah. I know I have to do that step. So I'm not going to miss that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But for anything else that's routine, got to hand it off.
Yep.
Got to hand it off.
Yep. Yeah. I'm trying to think, I'm trying to think of some of the things, because I am pretty much a minimalist. So I have not a lot of problem just cutting stuff off and being like, yep, I'm just not going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I took analytics off my site a long time ago because I knew I wasn't going to look at them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just not gonna. So right. there's like no, hilariously, there's not a line of JavaScript on my entire website, which is like funny for a web developer.
Yeah, exactly. For you, yeah. Especially.
I'm not going to look at it. So, mm-hmm. you know, why even know it's there? Trying to think of other things. There were some things that I just automated that were super tedious, like you're saying. Because like before, I'd send out my emails it was email first workflow where I'd, you know, type up the email and send it out through Drip, and then periodically I'd have to remember to go pull them out and post them as blog posts on my site. And sometimes I'd go for a month and not post anything on the site, and you know, mm-hmm. other times it was just really sporadic. So
the longer you go, the longer it takes. And then you're like, I don't have time to do that now. I'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah, it gets worse and worse.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like the laundry. But it's nagging at the back of your brain. Mm-hmm. Your brain can't let it go.
Yeah, right. It's like there's this listener in the software world. It's like a listener back there. It's like this background process that's running and running and running and using up CPU. And it's just like, just kill that process.
Yes. You know? Yes, that's what a great analogy or metaphor that is for the stuff that we do in our businesses that doesn't really move the needle.
Mm. And the thing that's surprising, it shouldn't be surprising, but it is how much joy I experience every time I click that new button I made. It's like, oh, so great. You know, it's kind of ridiculous because the level of friction that I removed is so low that it wouldn't even make sense to outsource to someone. I mean, it's like literally maybe not even minutes. I mean, maybe it was 2 minutes. Maybe I'm bad at estimating time, and it was 5 minutes a day, but it was every day. Mm-hmm. And that 5 minutes, it's like this, it's like a little rock in your shoe, and you're just like, oof. And then finally I pull the rock out of the shoe and it's like,
Well, yeah, it's your minimalist soul.
Yeah.
S-O-U-L. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
No pun intended, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's finding those things that really matter. And I think sometimes, maybe you don't have this problem, maybe you let go easier, but sometimes I feel like, and I've seen this with clients, where it's hard to let go of those things that you do because you've always done them. And I think I've noticed, especially with COVID, that for people who were anchored to an office, they had a lot of routines that were tied to being in an office.
Oh, that's a yes. Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden you're not going to the office. You don't do those routines and maybe they don't matter. I mean, some of them probably do, but some of them are not going to. Like I'm thinking of one client who before COVID, every Monday morning before going into the office, he would go to a Starbucks. He'd shut his phone off. He'd put his headphones on and he would write. He would deliver all of his writing assignments for the week on Monday morning before he ever stepped foot in the office. Mm. And, you know, he needed that because the office was a busy, crazy place where they always, you know, want one at him. So it's, yeah, I think there's some stuff that's buried in our day-to-day that we don't even realize unless we start looking at it.
Yeah, that reminded me of some stuff that I cut out earlier this year. We've already talked about it, but you know, when I first got an office outside of the house, it made sense. There were, you know, because I was trying to have conference calls, and there was like two little kids running around. It was kind of hard. But you know, fast forward 4 years, and the kids are more grown up, and you know, I'm not using the office. It was like, yeah, this is not this routine and this time and money investment in having an office outside of the house is no longer. It's just not delivering any results. It's not. It's the value's not there anymore. So I cut that off. Another thing was last year I experimented with a YouTube channel, gave it a try, not delivering the results. Just you know, I mean, maybe I'll do something with it later if I just go back to doing some videos. Obviously, I'll post them there, but it
Oh,
wasn't.
you did stop. I didn't realize you had stopped.
Yeah, I stopped at the end of 2019. I basically did it for 2019, and it was okay, but it just doesn't deliver any results. You know, it's not. It was basically my foray into seeing if search traffic mattered for me, and it doesn't. So that's going to sound crazy to some people because you know if you have a certainly if you have a business, you know, you're a locksmith or a laundromat or a doctor, you have some kind of local business that you know people are going to Google for, like, oh, I need a plumber near me. You better have good SEO, or you're never going to get, you know, your business is, you're not going to get any business from the web anyway. So, you know, there are certain things where I think SEO and that's kind of certain kind of businesses where SEO is critically important. But for me, it's really not. It's all word of mouth, and the videos only served to increase trust, which is fine, but I'd rather do that on podcasts and not have to turn a camera on and edit the video and blah, 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 tags and all this other stuff. And, you know, I had my VA do it, but it wasn't working. You know, it wasn't working the way I wanted it to.
Well, plus, you know, we talked about this on another episode too, is that you use words that take on a meaning of their own and people search on them. In fact, I meant to tell you, I was writing a post, I think it was last week, and I wrote soggy positioning. And I went, I feel like I'm stealing this. So I looked it up, and sure enough, it was you. So I changed it. I'm like, no, I'm not gonna, you know, purloin Jonathan's words. But you came up immediately if you look up soggy positioning.
Oh,
I'm
that's
like,
funny.
that's because I felt like I felt like it was not my word, but it felt like I'd heard it a million times. I'm like, well, duh, of course, it's Jonathan.
Yeah, I actually accidentally coined that. I probably didn't. I believe I come up for it, but I'm sure I didn't come up with it originally. But I coined that at a conference where I was doing a live kind of like teardown of people's positioning statement, and I'd say, okay, who wants to tell me what they do? And the audience would raise their hand, and somebody would say, and if they gave me a really weak answer, which literally everyone did, I would pretend I was holding a soggy diaper, and I'd like soggy diaper on the floor.
Well,
was
if
funny.
I use it in the future, I'll be sure to attribute it.
I feel free to use away. Happy to contribute to the lexicon. So that was you know, the YouTube channel, my office. These are things that required time and money and attention, and they, you know, maybe they're fun, maybe they're a routine that I liked or didn't. Maybe they bolstered my ego or whatever, but they weren't delivering results, and they weren't really worth the investment. So apologies to anyone out there who enjoys the YouTube channel. Maybe I'll post some things there later, but it just isn't a good, it wasn't a good fit. The numbers just didn't make sense. And if I'm going to, you know, everybody's got limited resources, time, money, energy. So you got to pick and choose. And I'd much rather, you know, create podcasts and write and maybe do webinars with live people instead of posting sort of like pre-recorded videos and then just trying to like respond to people in the comments. It just feels like it's more of a time suck.
Well, just a thought, because and I'll share my experience with this also. So one thought is you've got all those videos and you might be able to use them in your email. You know, where people don't necessarily gather on the YouTube channel, you probably still have people in your audience who like video. So there may be some ways where, like, when you're writing about something, you attach a link to a specific video. Say, you know, I talked about this in this video, and here it is.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because I did something similar but different. I can't remember what year I did it. It was probably like 2013, 2014, something like that. And I did this experiment that I called Rochelle TV. And what I would do is once a week I would do a video. And all it was it was taken from an article I'd already written. So I didn't have to really develop much in content. I just had to film myself talking about it. They were always under 3 minutes. And what I found was interesting, which is my core audience didn't care. Didn't watch them, didn't care. I got a new audience. But the new audience didn't buy anything. They didn't really connect. They liked the videos. They were complimentary, but they just kind of sat there. And I went, you know what? My core audience, it might change now. I mean, it's 7 years later, something like that, and people watch more videos. Maybe it would change now. But I stopped doing it. Like, no. And I still have some on my site because I think, you know, they're interesting if somebody likes their content in video, and I had them, so I put them up there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think sometimes we just can move things around a little bit. It's like, you know, when you clean a room and you move an item from one corner to the other, and all of a sudden the room looks so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Erica at the knitting store. If she like rearranges yarn that's been sitting there for 6 months and puts it somewhere else, boom, what do you know? It sells
sold
that day.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not even going to put that much energy. I mean, you're right. It probably would be good. But it's just like, it feels like a distraction because I had the same experience. It was like people were very complimentary. They were helpful. I leave them up, you know, people can still benefit from them. But, you know, the point of it was to get people to subscribe to my mailing list or listen to a podcast. Mm-hmm. It wasn't to build a big YouTube channel. It was like very top of the funnel SEO based activity where people are searching for how to become a consultant, and like, boom, there I am. So it was kind of like an awareness and a discovery channel. But generally people that are searching for the kinds of things that are going to pull up my videos kind of indicate that you're pretty early in your journey. And even purchasing my book is like a stretch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are folks who are trying to bootstrap their way into a career at a young age. And I love that. And I'll leave the videos up and hopefully they help people. But I feel like, you know, I did like probably 40, and there's, you know, I covered all the main bases. I just said, hey, you got a question, ask me a question and I'll answer your question. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of them up there and you can continue to use them. But, you know, they had the same experience. It was a different audience. It was an audience that's not really ready for the kind of stuff I feel like is my sweet spot. So, you know, whatever. Experiment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's a really important piece of all of this. I mean, we talk about it all the time, but it's knowing who your sweet spot is. And some of that comes with you have to experiment. Gee, if you know who your sweet spot is, but you're not sure if they're somewhere, if they're on a particular platform, you have to try it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? See if they're there. See if you get some nibbles. What does that look like and feel like? But yeah, I find the same thing when I get people who are really early in the journey. I love it when they read my stuff. And sometimes they'll reach out and ask me to work with them, and I'm just too expensive for them. Mm. But my comment is, I've got so much free stuff on the site.
Right.
That's what it's there for. Use it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Cool. Okay. So moral of the story is, you know, this is as good a time as any, especially going into the fall, because the fall every year, I'm sure even this year, is going to be a dash to the finish line. So, you know, and I presume that we'll talk about that as we have done in the past when the time comes. But for now, it's just sort of last chance to kind of look at how you've been spending your time and money and measure somehow the results that those different things are producing for you, and then perhaps let go of things that are, you know, 80% of the work delivering 20% of the results.
Yeah, and let me just add to that, especially if you're wanting to switch gears and invest your time and energy in something new, you got to clear out some of the old to make space for the new.
Mm-hmm. It's just like shoes.
No. Shoes, we always find extra storage for, Jonathan. I taught you nothing?
Every time Erica brings home new shoes, I'm like, oh, those are great. Which ones are you going to throw out?
No.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, that's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Rochelle Moulton.
And we hope you join us again next time for the Business of Authority. Bye.
Bye-bye.